To see examples of what we talk about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
All right, you just heard the song, but you may have forgotten who we are. So I'll tell you, this is the Two Dimension, the comic book podcast in No Direction. My name is Don, and
I'm Rook.
And I want to start this off with an apology. We never meant for this to be so long. A lot of things happen. Some people are out of the area. Some people have been off the grid. And we've done everything we could. We got one of Al's old Destination Nightmare shows up. I've asked Al if he could do a show with Joust. He'd been on the show before. He said he would. And again, things kept happening.
Life gets in the way sometimes.
I even contacted Mal from the Bunch of Dorks, the head dork, and I asked Mal if he could do a show with me. And the trick is, Mal doesn't read comic books. And I said, well, it wouldn't matter. He agreed. He said, well, it could be fun, but I don't read comics. Well, that's okay. He said, I could talk a little about comics. He said, there's enough stuff we both like that, and as you know, we always get off topic. So he agreed to it, and he's trying to set a time, and I says, okay, well, one other thing, Dallas has been the sound man for every episode, and his computer has been packed away, and he can't get to it. And I've got all the theme song and bumpers and everything. He says, would it be possible if you could put it together? I'm the guest that shows up and never leaves. But nevertheless, he didn't do it. I don't know why. But anyway, today's Free Comic Book Day. I made the trek out up here, and then Rook said, why don't we do a show? So
here we are, guys.
Yeah, after months and months.
I apologize for the great delay.
But thanks for everybody that sent in interest and asking what happened to us. And one other thing, we have malware on our website. I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah, I actually was aware of that.
And it was a shock. We never had any problem. And one day I went to it to work on it, and all of a sudden it popped and said Deceptive Site. So if you go to the site, it'll say Deceptive Site, which is really terrifying. But if you just close the window out and try to go back again, you shouldn't have any trouble. It does have a redirect.
Clear your history.
Is that it?
You should be able to clear your history and get it out of there. But, well, 'cause the history probably has a link to the malware. I don't even know how we got it on there. Well, we apologize, guys.
That's what I was wondering about, because on the sidebar, and I, you know, you never know. You're always overthinking things. I do. But on the sidebar of the blog, I have the comics library online, and I've got several links to sites that you can go to and read comic books. You don't download them. You can read them if you want to. And for some reason, I was thinking that's what gave the malware. And I found out that it was not. I did what I could. I've been researching, trying to find it, but we have an administrator for the Bunch of Dorks, and I can't get to the actual code. I can do the code for the episodes, but not for the site. So I contacted the administrator and cried to him, sent him all the information I got, and then it's been nothing. I noticed sometimes the redirects slow down, and sometimes they happen when I'm different. Usually it's when you're at the header. Yeah. But once in a while, it's when I scroll down, it'll get me again.
Yeah. Well, just keep in mind, everybody, that you can still get us on Stitcher.
Yeah, and iTunes.
And iTunes. So, you know, while we're working on the fix for the website, make sure everything's good there, you can definitely find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Yeah. So.
But, like I said, the site, there's not an issue. It won't download or mess up your computer. It may redirect you, which is irritating. I apologize, especially if you're new and you go to, what's happening? But, basically, I was told that it's, they say it's an outdated plugin that we used, and they haven't found it. They say every time they remove it, it pops up again in the code. So we're aware of it. We apologize. Nothing but apologies this episode.
And a little bit of comic book talk. A little bit of comic book talk.
A little bit of comic book talk in between all the apologies.
All right, so we got all that out of the way for everybody. let's actually talk about some comic books, because like you mentioned, it's free comic book day.
Yeah, free comic book day. This is the first time Yancey wasn't in the mall, and I wasn't sure what to expect.
Well, I think it's the first time Yancey wasn't in the mall since we've been doing
the show.
Yeah,
since we've been doing the show. He was before, right?
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure what to expect, because Yancey would have a section outside in the mall. It was like a little mini convention. A lot of people in costumes.
Yep.
And so in the store was big, a lot of people in the store, a lot of people out the store. I was kind of surprised. It was an ant bed of activity.
Definitely was a packed house again today. Yeah. I mean, granted, there's no stage outside for the costume contest, and the cosplay contest was done a little differently this year. Mm. But, you know, all I know is I could still see and talk to all of the artists. I got to sit and talk with Sammy Castillo for a little while. And, I mean, she's fantastic. It's so good to see her. We missed her greatly last year. Mm. I had a blast. I had an absolute blast. Picked up a couple cool things. I was a little more reserved with my purchases this year. I was told we've run out of room around the house for art at the moment. So Sammy made a good idea to just start switching everything out, which I've said, but, you know, I got to convince other people around here that that's a good idea, too.
That's all, I've always heard people say that. When I bought prints, and I said, it's hard to find where to put things up, and one of the artists said, well, you can just switch them out when you get tired of them. Well,
we did it up front. We switched out two of the prints up front.
I understand what people say. I can't do it. If it's up there, it's up. I'm the kind of person, once I set it up, it stays that way till.
See, for me, I think, like just take the sixth set that's sitting on the wall right here. These are awesome prints, but I could totally see changing these out seasonally.
Yeah.
You know, and the best part about these frames that I use is that there's room for prints to go behind those prints.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if I had different, like, if I was changing out prints, I could put them behind that print. Because that's literally what I did up front. Up front, yeah. All I did is I took the new prints, went in front of the old prints.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, it does look nice.
Yeah, you know. Always invest in art. That's what I say.
Art you like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Don't buy art you don't like, because, you know, you're not going to... You have clowns on velvet constantly staring at you, and you don't like clowns. They terrify you. It's going to be a horrible experience, and you'll hate art.
Well, unless you like it. If you like it, that's okay, but if you're buying it just for value, no, that's no good.
Yeah.
Because it'll bite you. And there's a lot of kids at Free Comic Book Day, which makes me happy.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, the kids are always... I mean, it's one of the most important things about Free Comic Book Day, is seeing the kids get in there and, you know, see the comics. And, you know, it's just... two of my friends were there with both of their kids. They were running around getting stuff. They were having a blast.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And one thing, Yancey, they give you 4 free comics. And I know at one point, I think it was last year on Facebook, the owner made a comment, kind of flabbergasted, that some stores require purchase to get 1 book. And he said, that's not the purpose of Free Comic Book Day. Is, even though everybody says, you know, buy something because the comics aren't free for the store, but Yancey looks at it, it's to get people interested in comics, and that's, you know...
Yeah, absolutely.
No ulterior motives.
Yeah, you know, it's... If all you want, if you're just looking at this as a way to make people buy more, you know, buy more stuff, then I think you're looking at it wrong. Free Comic Book Day is a way to, it's a way to introduce the next generation of comic book readers. Mm. It's a way to take that guy that used to read comics, that guy or girl that used to read comics, and make them go, oh man, I remember this. And like, just for an example, you have Free Comic Book Day this year. DC had an issue. DC Nation, the Summer of Events, starts now. So this is going to be a little, you know, setup point for where everything's going for their summer events, I assume. I haven't read it. I'm making a lot of assumptions here. Maybe, hopefully not wrong ones. But, you know, it's... actually, I don't even know if that was an official Free Comic Book Day thing or not. Because it says it's 25 cents.
Oh, well, they just had it there on the table?
Steve might have just had extras of those. Yancey might have had extra of those. So, but, you know, it's... Free Comic Book Day is a chance to just get kids, yeah, get that one, adults.
That one I almost picked up.
Oh, the Nightmare Before Christmas one? This one. Oh, Brief History of Tank Girl. Yeah, I thought that would be cool.
This one underneath.
Oh, no, not that one.
This one was gone by the time I got the table.
Really? Yeah, I thought it was cool. Brief History of Tank Girl. Yeah, I'm not sure what this one is. It's Barrier. So...
Yeah, the cover caught me. I like the interiors, but I decided to get something else instead. Yeah,
that's a mature reader comic book, so I figured, you know, hey, sounds good to me.
You're fairly mature.
At times. You know, I try not to be.
What I like about Free Comic Book Day is sometimes I get free comics of things that I love already. You know, I just, for some reason, if I like it and there's a free comic, I'll pick it up. But I like it if it'll introduce me to something new. And there's several books I've picked up that it did exactly that. I got the book. I can't remember the name of that book I got. It was a miniseries from Image. But and we talked about the show in the past. But I don't know. It's great fun. One I picked up. I didn't like the cover. World's Greatest Cartoonist from Fantagraphics.
Yeah, I saw that. I just, I had three in my hand already. Yeah.
Well, you got four.
Well, I had three. I grabbed Barrier, because Barrier was right next to that one.
This one, actually, I do like the cover, but for some reason all I see is the text on it instead of the drawing.
Yeah.
And it threw me, but my brother sent me a thing on... basically a guide to the free comics. They had the, you know, what they did instead of doing it by the gold and silver, you know, packages. They did it by maturity, all ages, you know, young readers.
Yep.
And this one they had, and they said, snag this and as soon as you see it, because they're going to go fast. He wasn't kidding, because the Yancey, I saw it, and they had like three or four in the pile, whereas everybody else had big piles. So I bought it. I kind of thumbed through it just to make sure it's... Well, Jim Woodring is in it.
Oh, wow.
I really like it. But these other cartoonists I'm not really familiar with. Well, I've seen that one, too. But it's a collection of black and white work, which, you know, Fantagraphics does a lot. But they have color comics as well in it. But it's like a sampler pack of everything. And I said, yeah, I do like that. So...
Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, these are... It's a fun time. I mean, and I just, like, I don't get the shops that, you know, we were talking, I can't even say how many episodes it was because I don't remember now, about, like, some people's perception of Free Comic Book Day, like Freeloader Day.
Oh, yeah. It was Anthony Desiato, his old story. He called it Freeloader Day.
Yeah, his guy calls it Freeloader Day. I mean, you know, yeah, it can be, but, you know, when you walk in the door and there are sales and everything, and I mean, like, I picked up two new pop figures, I picked up a graphic novel, plus I grabbed my pull list, you know, it's, you know, I spent a good amount of cash there today.
I did, too. Well, Yancey, there's a store in Tallahassee, a secret headquarters. My daughter graduated school, and we went up there, and it was on Free Comic Book Day. And my wife and sister-in-law were with me, and I said, look, when everything was finished and the graduation we ate, I said, I'm going to Free Comic Book Day. And he had it was like Yancey. It was a plethora of people. He had a Spider-Man bouncy castle outside, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there was people digging through everything, but he had a massive sale. Same thing, he cleared a lot of stuff. But, again, people were just getting... My sister-in-law got free comic books. You know, everybody picked out some that they wanted. Some stores, it's just a regular day. They just have some free comics to introduce.
But the other thing is Steve also packs it full of creators.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I didn't even count how many creators were there this year. Did you?
No.
Hold on. Let me see if I can do a quick mental count. Over a dozen, I think. I want to say we had...
Was there four per row, or was it three?
God, now I can't remember if it was three or four per row. I didn't take any pictures this year. You know that?
Yeah, well, it was so crowded. Yeah. It was so crowded. I'm going to say there was about 12 to 14.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I don't talk to creators. If the creator I'm familiar with, I will. But
yep.
Rook is really good at this. Our friend Scott Connor in Virginia is a fantastic conversationalist. I just kind of stare at him, you know. And I'd like to look at the word, but to me, I'd like to look at it quietly by myself. And if I like it, then I get to go, "Hey, man, I love you. You're just the greatest," you know. But if not, I just kind of stare at you. But
Well, I think it's my background with dealing with bands and musicians. You know, I've seen famous musicians in the most drunken states possible. So to me, I get it. They're all humans.
Britt. He does that. He'll go up to any creators you never heard of that people can give the time of day.
Yep.
And Britt talks to him, finds out about their work. I mean, and it's not a put on. He's deeply interested in everything.
Yeah.
And there was book. I remember in the early 80s, there's two guys doing Iron Man for Marvel Comics, which Britt talked to him, really liked those guys, was telling me about it. And when I was on the ship, he'd always write me letters. You know, we talk about what we're reading and back and forth. And I remember Britt was saying, "Oh, an Iron Man." He says, "But I'm probably the only person I know that reads it." Well, it's because he met the two creators who have gone on and done other things.
Yep.
But Britt will stop and talk to anybody. And, I mean, they're really good conversations. But if I'm not familiar with the work, I don't have anything to say. I just kind of stare at you like, you know, you're a human oddity. Whereas I'm the one that has no social skills.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is, like I was talking with Sammy Castillo. She was talking, she told me a story about meeting Ron Perlman. She saw that I had the Hellboy pop. And, you know, just what a great story she had for to tell. And it was so much fun. You know, and that's the thing. It's like you just go up and you just start chatting away with people. Like, take Sergio Carello for example. Blah, I'm mumbling here now. You know, Sergio is a very religious man. He illustrated Bible.
Yeah.
He did that. He's quite religious actually. And like, I remember the first time I met him, I was like, I don't really want to talk about religion. Nope, all about comics and art and everything, you know. And I mean, yeah, a great guy to talk to, you know. It's, you know, you leave your preconceived notions about who the people are and what they do behind, and you just have a great conversation with them. And that's one of the great things that I love about Free Comic Book Day. Yeah, they're sitting there and they're doodling and they're drawing, or, you know, they're working on a sketch or a commission for somebody or something. But, like, there was a whole conversation being had on one side of the tables about the value of some of the comic books they worked on. And did you catch any of that?
No, but I'm interested.
So there was a guy, just a guy that was attending Free Comic Book Day, talking to the two artists about, like, yeah, that book, blah, I don't even remember what book it was that he mentioned. He goes, yeah, that thing sold for like $800. And the guy was like, what? What?
You mean the actual comic book itself?
Yeah, apparently, like, one of the books that somebody there worked on, like, years and years and years ago. Yeah. He's like, it sold for how much? Yeah, you know, it's like just kind of blown away.
You know, I never thought about it, but I wonder, say if we were comic book creators, I wonder how that would feel. Like, I mean, the way I would think was I would feel pride, the fact that, you know, something I did is so sought after.
Yeah. But then I'd also feel a little bit of a punch in the gut.
Well, going, that's
like,
it.
Wait a minute, I don't even have a copy of that myself.
I never thought of that one, but, you know, that's the thing. Because
yeah.
I just want to say this, I picture myself as a real douchebag if I was doing well, because I was sitting there, you know, we're all doing comics, save the four of us, which would be awesome. We were all cartoonists, had successful books, and I hate to seem like a shallow person, but I can see myself, say if all my books are really sought after, you'd start saying douchebag Don, come on, and I'd be like...
Autograph, $50.
Yeah, no, well, you know, I wouldn't, no, I'm just thinking, yeah, we all do comic books, but... people are paying $800 for mine. I wouldn't, you know. But then, yeah, I'd probably turn into Bitter Don instead of, oh, I didn't get any of that money. Who's getting all this money? I did all the work. Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting thing. We should ask some people that work in the industry how they feel about certain stuff like that.
Yeah, would you care if, like, you know, a lot of creators that I love, Paul Grist, you know, that does Jack Staff, I found 2 issues of Jack Staff in a dollar box. And then after that, I started going online and ordering all the other books. He's one of my favorite creators. He's one of those guys now, if he does anything, I buy it. Andy Watson. I found at Wilson's 2 issues of a book I never heard of called Love Fights. It was a black and white comic. The cover was black and white with a little bit of red. He had a simple style. I bought them just thinking, well, I like to look at it. I loved them. Found out it was a 12-issue series. Bought them all. And they were hard to find, too.
Yeah.
Bought them all. I thought, this is one of the greatest series I ever read. I could hold it close to my heart. Found a guy online, talked to him. I said, you know, I found 2 issues of Love Fights in a dollar box. Went and found the other 12 issues. Thanks for doing it. It was a great story. But now I wonder if that's like a backhanded compliment. Yeah, I found a couple of issues of a dollar box. You know? If you're a creator, would you feel bad if everything I did was in the dollar box and everything Rook did was $800 a back issue? I wonder what that do, you know, would you care?
I imagine that must form a little bit of bitterness in some of them. But
I don't know. At the same time, well, if you're in the dollar box, probably a lot more people are reading yours.
Yeah, if you're in the dollar box, you know, hey, a lot more accessible.
I'm the people's cartoonist.
The people's cartoonist. There you go. That's a good one.
No, but it was fun. Like I said, when I go to Yancey, I buy.
Yeah.
I bought a book that I've never seen or heard of. It's shrink wrapped. Black Hand Comics.
What is that?
I don't know. I'll pop it open, man.
Oh.
It's from Image. It's a short book. It's a hardback. It's like a regular size hardback, but it's really short and long. And it's got a magician on the cover. It's by Wes Craig. And it's got it's got 3 characters, the Gravediggers Union, Circus Day, and the Seed. I'm hoping.
Here he goes, he's opening it up.
Yeah, I'm destroying the value of it.
Oh no, now it's worth less than half.
You know, in the 90s when that was a big thing and they were shrink wrapping comics.
Oh my god, I actually still have copies of X-Force #1 where they shrink-wrapped it, packaged a card inside there.
Yeah, now that I thought was neat, because if you got it, you had a card. And I'm not going to make fun of this. I didn't like it. And one thing I always thought about, though, was one of these companies could just put a cover with blank pages inside and charge you for it, and nobody would know.
Yeah.
But the first 1 issue of Batman Adventures, the comic book that DC did based off the cartoon that I loved, one of the issues, they put a card, and they shrink-wrapped it, and the shrink-wrap was decorated. It had artwork of Batman on it. Well, of course, I opened it, you know, and read the book. Well, one time in the dollar box, I found it shrink-wrapped. I already had it, but I bought it just because I thought it'd be kind of neat to have the shrink-wrap. And Sergio Arguez did a series that I highly recommend called The Mighty Magnor. It was 6 issues from Malibu Comics. And the first issue was a pop-up cover. And it was a joke because you open it up and it had Magnor destroying the city. But the actual cover before you popped it up was this guy standing there crying. And his little sister's there on the floor reading the comic book. And there's all these other kids there. They're all collectors. And they're all like, poor guy. And he's crying, saying, my sister opened up my sealed copy of the Mighty Magnor. Now it's destroyed its property value. And everybody else is like, neat, you know, poor guy. And the sister's looking on the floor, just happy, going, neat.
Yeah.
Well, I bought it, opened it, you know, tore the thing so I could, you know, read it. I always loved it. And then later I thought, you know, it would be kind of neat. It's just a plate, you know, clear plastic. But it would need to have one that's never been opened. Couldn't find it. I found it in a dollar box. I pulled it out. I'm surprised I didn't burn it from the friction of ripping it out so quick. And I read online some guys were taking it. One guy was asking, he had a sealed copy, and he's wanting to take it to Sergio Arganez to get signed. Another guy, several guys commented on it. And says, well, he'll sign it. He says, but I got to warn you, when they're sealed, he tears it open, pulls the comic book out, and signs it there. Well, as he should.
Yeah.
But nevertheless,
he's gonna sign plastic. Come on.
Nevertheless, I got two issues that are sealed that I've never opened, but it wasn't one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Black Hand. One thing, my brother is a musician, but he and I grew up, you know, with card tricks and this and that. I'm not good at magic tricks, but for some reason, magicians just fascinate me. And in the Golden Age, there was all kinds of newspaper strips like Mandrake the Magician and Zatara, which I guess is Zatanna's father.
Zatanna's, yep.
And every comic book company had a magician. Will Eisner had, I can't remember the name. There was Ibis the Mystic. There was another one. There was bunches of them.
Doctor Strange.
Yeah, well, Doctor Strange to me is
that's the obvious one.
That is a great one, but he was... Doctor Strange was really magic. Some of these guys, to me, were just illusionists. You know that.
Yeah.
But my brother was always fascinated with magicians, and at one point he was trying to. Oh, okay. This is interesting. It's a black and white comic, but the first story is the Grave Diggers Union, and it's about grave diggers.
Ah. So we got a three-story piece.
Yeah, and this is Circus Day.
Nice. Okay. All done in black and white.
Yeah, except there is one color page here.
Okay.
Oh, one. Well, it's three. Oh, that's neat.
Other page is in color? Is
No. This is neat. Oh, God. I know this is good radio. It starts out, they're going to the circus.
Okay.
But I'm guessing the color pages are when you're actually seeing the show.
Ah, okay.
Which is how the show seems. You know, it goes back to the crowd, shows the crowd there in black and white.
The crowd's in black and white. Everything with the circus is
I'm glad I bought this.
Yeah, it's nice work. That's nice. That's great. Just the simpleness of alteration between color and shading.
Yeah.
Does great for the storytelling.
And the format of the book, the pages work. The cartoonist just thought these out, and there's a reason why he set the format of the book up. A book I never heard of, wrapped. I couldn't see the interiors. Bought it. I'm happy. But it's three stories. I thought it'd be about a magician. And like I said, I was going to buy it from my brother because he loves that kind of stuff. I thought, well, this would be something, but I think I may be keeping this.
That's pretty neat. Awesome. Well, I picked up a graphic as well. I grabbed Michael Daughtry Presents Trick or Treat, Days of the Dead. Now, I think I've talked about this movie before.
You mentioned it, but yes. I don't remember.
Trick or Treat, it's a series of short stories that all intertwine. You have this character, Sam, who he's kind of like a little sack bag head Halloween creature. It's a great movie. I don't want to disclose too much about it because, you know, it's very easy to reveal too much. But this is a graphic novel along the same storylines with the same Sam is appearing in it, I assume. I'm flipping through it. I haven't seen him yet. But, oh, this looks like it's actually like stories of Halloween through history. That's
I really like the work.
That's cool. Yeah, it's great artwork. So
the colors, everything on it is slick. Who's the publisher?
It's Legendary. Legendary Press published it.
I'm not familiar with them.
Well, you got a couple of different artists in here. Fiona Staples, Stephen Byron, Stuart Sager, and Zid. Z-I-D. That's a new one. Never heard of Zid.
Yeah, but that'd be a cool name to have.
It would, wouldn't it?
If you're a cool guy, if you're a dork, it wouldn't be.
So. I don't know. There's a few bands out there that I've worked with over the years that it's like, wait, the lead singer's name is what? And then you meet them, and it's like, hi, guys.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes you give yourself a name, if you're cool, you can pull it off, yeah. But sometimes you give yourself a name, it just makes you a bigger dork than you already are.
Oh, there was one band, I remember going to see him live for the first time, and the singer has this very, like, very large name. I'm not going to mention any names on this one, but the singer's name is very kind of menacing. And he comes out on stage, and he's got this mask on, and he's singing and everything, and he's all wrapped up and very, very menacing looking.
Yeah.
And he takes the mask away, and my first thought was, wow, look at that nerd. The best part is one of my friends was with me. He goes, that's really not what I expected him to look like.
Yeah, you always have a picture in your mind of what somebody should be, and then you meet them, and oh, they're just regular people. This isn't cool, you know.
Yeah. It's like, you're supposed to be awesome.
And the first time I ever saw a professional cartoonist was in a convention in Oklahoma. And it was a cartoonist that I loved dearly. And again, I'd always hear of some guys that got something signed, but they were always up in New York where all these guys were. But to me, you'd read the letter's name or the artist's name or the writer's name in a comic, and bigger than life. You know, Gardner Fox, you know, John Severin, John Buscema, you know, Jack Kirby. And the person I met was none of those people. But it was somebody I really loved, and I was expecting, like, you know, those old religious paintings where you have little angels, you know, floating around carrying things and stuff, and, you know, trumpets playing. And it was just a person that I didn't particularly care for too much when I was around. It was a little disappointing, you know. So.
Well, I remember as a kid, I always looked at comic book artists and writers like, I bet that dude's rich.
Oh, yeah.
I bet that guy's loaded. And then, like, you get to meet him when you get older. And, like, I remember one time I was trying to get an autograph. And he said something about, he goes, hey, would I be a complete dick if I asked for, like, $5 for the autograph so I can go grab lunch? And I'm thinking to myself, and he's like, I don't carry any. He goes, I don't have any cash on me. I'm really hungry. And I was like, I'll buy you lunch. And like just then, somebody from the convention came by and was like, yeah, we're taking lunch orders. He's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. Of all things, this is when I was in college. I always watched David Letterman religiously. And a woman I've never heard of came out as his guest. It was Jane Pauley from the Today Show.
Yep.
And I guess she's still on CBS or something like this now. I didn't know who she was. But she was, you know, basically a news anchor or entertainment anchor. And she came out talking to David Letterman. And at one point, David Letterman said she was married to Gary Trudeau, who does Doonesbury. All of a sudden, I perked up.
Yeah, I know that name.
You know, like, wait a minute. She must be somebody if she's married to Gary Trudeau. And she was. She was interesting. She was charming. Yep. I did like her.
Yep.
But I'm like,
everybody else watching that was going, who the hell is Gary Trudeau?
Well, then later, David Letterman was giving her a hard time about, well, which one of you makes more money? And she immediately didn't want to answer the question. She handled it well.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, well, he does, of course. He does Doonesbury. Who is this woman? She just talks on TV? And then she explained that, you know, when he's doing a strip like Doonesbury, he says, you got a lot of, you know, college students from Harvard and, you know, business people reading it.
Yeah.
And he says, they're not the kind of people that go out and buy a T-shirt or a plush or a lunchbox. He says, if you wanted to do a lot of money, you need to make a strip like Garfield.
Yeah.
And,
merchandising.
And saying that, a lot of people try to do comic strips to be merchandised and they fall flat on their face. So even though I don't like Garfield, this is, well, there was something to it.
You know, there's a thing about that though. I don't think you can honestly create something and go, ha, this is gonna be merchandised.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, God, I'm blanking out. Spaceballs, you know, merchandising, merchandising. That's all I can ever think about when I hear.
No, you're absolutely right. You know? Peanuts.
Yeah.
Peanuts is the most successful merchandised comic strip or anything probably in the world.
But who would have thought?
Yeah,
who would have thought? When it came out, you know, you'd have the Snoopy snow cone maker, the you know, the Snoopy leash, the Charlie Brown T-shirts, you know,
everything, all this different anything stuff. You can imagine,
yeah,
is done.
My wife has a dress that I tell her she looks like Lucy in every time she wears it. She looks adorable. I love it. You know? Think about that. They should probably make an officially licensed merchandise Peanuts Lucy dress.
They probably have, or Charlie Brown yellow sweater with the zigzag stripe in it.
You're welcome, by the way. I'll take my gratuity for that.
I'm sure that stuff's already been done. But anyway, with that, I was so fascinated just because she was married to Gary Trudeau, and then later I was at work talking about it. And when I said with David Letterman, asked the question, which makes more money? And this woman I worked with goes, well, she does. What do you mean she does? Even though Jane Pauley answered that question, it didn't convince me. And she goes, I said, Gary Trudeau has created something out of nothing, writes it and draws it every day. Millions of people read it. All she does, she's a talking head on TV.
She just chats on TV. Who cares?
And then they were trying to explain to me how the world really works in reality and not in Don World. But
wouldn't it be so much nicer if it worked in Don World?
But somebody, now saying this, I was just thinking on the couch, and I said, you know, we got a big backyard. My wife's always planting things. And I said, you know, why don't we plant peanuts? And I can roast them and make peanut butter and sell them. Yeah. And sell peanut butter. And then my wife, honey, you can't do that. Why can't I do that? I love peanut butter. That'd be neat. I can make a really neat label, put them in little glass jars and sell them. People like it. And then she started explaining to me about you know, how hard it is to grow peanuts. And, you know, could you grow them in Florida? Well, you probably could, but it'd probably be hard at some times. She, you know, my wife knows all this stuff.
Yep.
And she goes, it's easier just to go buy a can of peanut butter in a jar, you know, a jar of peanut butter at the store. Yeah, but I could sell it. People like it. So anyway, Don World sometimes isn't the best place to be.
Listen, I know exactly what you're talking about because I grew my cucumbers last year. Everybody loves my pickles.
Yeah.
Now, I went by the barbershop and something got said about the pickles, and my barber's like, oh, yeah, where's my pickles? You know, and come to find out, he's been like taking other pickles and sticking them into the brine that I used.
Oh, wow. So he just says it makes it taste better when you use just the old brine.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. I don't know, but like my cucumbers are doing horrible this year. So I was laughing and joking with my wife about the same thing. I'm like, hey, why don't we just grow cucumbers and like pickles and sell pickles?
It makes sense.
I'm having a horrible year, so that like whole idea, that whole like, you know, craft pickle industry thing is just out the window for me right now because I'm having a horrible year growing.
I'm sorry about that, but I'm glad people like your pickles and so much that they put other pickles in the brine. That's awesome.
I guess.
All right. Well.
Break time.
Yeah, let's do a music break.
All right. Be right back.
Let's try. Let's all situation.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Your Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
And that was Gray Market. They're a Tampa Bay area band that I really like, and you can see them. Just go to their site.
And guys, if you've got a local band, if you want to get some airplay on this show, just contact us. Send us a message, email, Facebook. I personally am on Instagram more than anything else these days. I'm kind of leaning my way away from Facebook, and it's it's information selling asses. But
you know that Facebook owns Instagram.
Yeah, I know, but Instagram is much more, I don't know, the vibe of Instagram is much easier for me to deal with.
A lot of people are saying that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know what it is. Facebook is stressful. It's people arguing, where Instagram's whole vibe is just like, it's just a photograph, you know?
I got you.
You know, it's a shot. It's a moment in time.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like you're seeing snapshots and then people can't comment on them, but...
Yeah,
Facebook has turned into, well, it's always been a feed.
Facebook has turned into a war zone.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, that's...
And it's very uncomfortable.
And
you know?
What's strange is, if you're political, you get to see the same post on both sides about each other with the same photos, the same information.
I'm telling you, and that's one of my biggest problems is that, like, you know, I used to love to fight and argue politics.
Mm.
But nowadays, it will get you, I mean, you will get in so much trouble dealing with people.
And no win.
Yeah, and I'm talking about both sides. So don't somebody sit there on the other side of this, on the other side of these speakers thinking, yeah, I know what he means, you know, those darn Republicans, those darn Democrats. No, it's both of y'all.
Yeah.
Y'all crazy. That's all I got to say about politics. Moving on. Send us your music.
Yeah, we have a contact page thanks to James Perry. So just go to the contact page. If you want a book reviewed, which we have done, you can get it there. If you want to send us music, you send it there, and we'll be glad to play it. Now, Rook mentioned Instagram, which sets me up for something. We've been talking about web comics. I like to bring up one each show.
Yeah,
it's on the sidebar of our blog, and I tell you. This one I cannot recommend high enough. It's not a typical webcomic. It's called Kirby Comic, and it's by Tom Scioli, which I hear of all the time.
Have we talked about this before?
Nope.
We haven't? I feel like I've heard this.
Yeah, no, you and I haven't. Okay. I might have mentioned it when we were talking about webcomics, but I never talked about it much.
Okay, all right.
Now, this one, I'm embarrassed to say, I must have found it somebody talking about it on Facebook. But it's on Instagram. It's on the sidebar of our blog. If you just go there, go to down to the webcomics, and it'll say Kirby Comic. But I've heard the name Tom Scioli all the time, I think on Word Balloon, you know, the podcast. Okay. But I hear him a lot. But this one, he doesn't draw in a Jack Kirby style like a lot of people would. He has his own unique, expressive, cartoony type style. But sometimes, even though he draws the faces cartoony, sometimes the rest of it is drawn fairly real. And he gave it an old pastel sepia look to it. And it looks like he's drawn it in graphite and then colored it. It's got a nice look. One thing, if you do go to this page, which I cannot recommend high enough, when you go to the Instagram page, scroll down to the very bottom, you go to the far right, you know, image.
Okay.
And then you can click on it. And then after that, you can just click on it, go, you know, left to right and read a whole sequence. When you come back, go to the next panel to the left from the bottom, click on that, read them that way. Because if you do what I did and you start in the beginning, you start reading about Jack Kirby in World War II and go all the way back when his parents immigrated from Austria. But well, this isn't reading right. But I guess when the creator puts these things up, it posts from the bottom and posts to the up. But it's telling stuff. I mean, by this time, most people that have an interest in Jack Kirby have heard a lot of these things. But it's telling the whole story of him and how he was working for Victor Fox and how he worked for the Fleischer brothers for a while on the Popeye cartoon. How he's supposed to go to Pratt Institute and the stock market crashed and his father lost his job and Jack Kirby was, you know, having to help out the family. How he ended up meeting, well, he worked for Will Eisner at the Eisner-Iger studio, the whole towel story that we've always talked about.
Yep.
And then it talks about how he meets Joe Simon. Well, again, these are stories I've always heard, but when I read it in this sequence, it kind of makes more sense. And then how they ended up working for Martin Goodman. And, well, Joe Simon was working for Martin Goodman. And then Jack Kirby was taking any kind of work he got. And he says, why are you taking all this penny ante crap? And he says, come over to Timely, you can make more money. So Joe Simon was the managing editor at Timely Comics, and he brought Jack Kirby over as the art director. And then it goes on there how they met Stan Lee. You know, he was the office boy that worked there. And then it goes on. And I did not know that when World War II was going on, I thought Jack Kirby went right away. He did not. Because he was the sole breadwinner for two families, him and his wife and his parents. And so he got a deferment for a while. Yeah. And then finally the draft was coming and he did go. But I don't know, it's a fun read. And I can't stress, and it goes the way up to when he's in World War II and they're in Europe. And then it stops. What I'm guessing is the thing progresses, he puts more on. And I read information, you know, comments on this, and I always hear a lot of times, which I agree with, are you going to put these in a book? And he says, well, that's his plan. But again, I can't stress this. I recommend it. It's a bit awkward to read if you're like me and you're not familiar with the Instagram format. But
yeah, I actually just pulled up the one about John Goldwater, who ran Archie, threatened a lawsuit because he felt Captain America was too similar to his character,
The Shield.
And then it shows them in the meeting, and it shows end result. We started drawing Cap Shield around it.
Now, I never knew that. Now, because of Al, I did learn. I didn't know the Shield came before Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Captain America was the first patriotic one. And I've seen the Shield, but it was always in a past thing. But and I never realized Captain America's kite shield was the Shield's chest.
Yeah.
You know, from Archie. At the time, yeah. Archie Comics was MLJ Comics.
Yeah.
And they were superheroes, and later they started doing Archie as well as the superheroes. But I never knew that, and I didn't know that's why Captain America's shield was round, which Archie did him a favor.
Yeah, absolutely. Did him a huge favor. And what's interesting is if you look, years ahead into... oh, my wife's logged into my computer. If you look years ahead into everything with Captain America, they went back and retroconned some of the things with Cap, and they showed, you know, in Captain America history why the shield changed and things.
No, see, that one I've always heard, but I never knew it was because of Archie Comics.
Yeah, yeah, the actual real world reason apparently was because of the Archie Comics thing.
Yeah, which so. Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, because if you look at the two of them standing next to each other, it's pretty obvious.
Oh, it's really obvious.
Yeah. Well, it's just like DC and Marvel with Slade and Deadpool, you know?
Yeah.
Which, have you seen the commercial for the new Teen Titans movie?
No.
I'll have to show it to you. Absolutely freaking hilarious point where Slade shows up in the commercial and they're like, Deadpool?
Slade, you're talking about Deathstroke?
Deathstroke, yeah.
No, I got you. I never thought about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Deathstroke came first. And then Marvel came along with Deadpool. Leafield came along with Deadpool. Okay. So,
let's talk about all this stuff for a minute. Because, you know, of course, Deadpool is a completely different character than Deathstroke. Even though,
right.
You know,
costuming-wise, very similar.
See, when my nephew in California liked Deadpool, and he was telling me about it. When I see Deadpool, all I see is a reverse Spider-Man.
Ah.
I mean, he, you know, he's a guy with a full mask with a, at the time, his eyes kind of looked like Spider-Man's eyes,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, they did.
And even though he had weapons and belts and all this stuff, but I just thought it was just a variation of Spider-Man. But now I can see where, you know, Deathstroke, you know,
yeah.
Deadpool were mercenaries. But, I mean, Deadpool ended up being a completely different entity. That's
yeah. And what's funny is DC's come back later on with, I want to say the character's name is Toolbox. I may be wrong. Don't get bent out of shape, anybody. But in the Harley Quinn comic books, they have the character that, like, I mean, the color match is almost right on.
Yeah.
You know, and he has like the funny little word bubbles like Deadpool does and everything like that, and you know, so he's pretty much a knock from DC on Deadpool. So,
well, the Teen
hilariously done, by the way.
The Teen Titans comic, you know, the one we're talking about is the new Teen Titans by Marv Wolfman and George Perez, which was an awesome, awesome series.
Well, this movie, it's an animated movie, Teen Titans Go.
Oh, I got
that's
you.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the comic books. When George Perez came to DC, him and Marv Wolfman brought the Teen Titans back as the new Teen Titans, and they added Starfire, they added a Changeling, and Cyborg.
Cyborg, you know? Raven.
And Raven, they were the new characters, and they had Wonder Girl, Kid Flash, and Robin. And but you know, Teen Titans were kind of a comic book that in the 70s was a dying comic. They brought it back, and they were always. They weren't a superhero team. They were a teen team that kept meeting like street gangs and stuff like that. It was to me, it was. I bought them. I say this. I bought every one of them, but I'd always wonder why. And but when they brought the new Teen Titans back, and that's when they introduced Deathstroke, and it was hitting on all cylinders, and it just got better and better and better.
Yeah.
But they had a character in 1984 or 85. Called the Vigilante, and
I vaguely can picture the character in my head.
Well, it's not the cowboy character they had in the past.
Okay,
this was a guy in a superhero suit. You couldn't see his face, like Spider-Man, a complete mask. He had a gun or guns. Ended up, he was a judge. He was, you know, a courtroom judge, and. Kind of like the idea of Daredevil, where he's an attorney, and if he can't really fix things with the legal channels, he puts on the Daredevil suit and goes and roughs them up. But he was basically DC's take on the Punisher.
Oh, yeah, I remember this character.
And yep. Daredevil. And I remember I came back from overseas.
Oh. Apparently he, I'm really behind on Arrow, so, and if anybody else is behind, ignore this next comment. Spoiler, apparently he shows up in Arrow.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's a pretty spot on costume, too, if you look at it. Here, take a look at this.
Yeah.
That's pretty dang spot on,
yeah,
to
it's,
the,
it's,
to the costume.
They made it more paramilitary, but they followed what made it the costume. It makes sense.
But it would make sense for anything like, I mean, take a look at what they did with Punisher Warzone. I mean, they made him very much more militant looking.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And so, like in those Marvel movies, Captain America, even though he has a Captain America suit, it does look like a...
It's a more military style.
Which makes perfect sense. But anyway, talking about that, there's some... The Captain Marvel, you know, the original Captain Marvel from Fawcett Comics, which this all ties in. Everything ties in. It always goes... Jack Kirby and Joe Simon were doing comics on the side for everybody. And they were doing Captain Marvel. And nobody knew this. And one thing, Joe Simon, a lot of times would come up with these ideas of the characters. I always thought Jack Kirby created Captain America. There's drawings of Joe Simon doing it before Jack Kirby drew it, which I do believe.
Right.
But and Joe Simon would write the story out, Jack Kirby would, you know, draw him. But when Jack Kirby would draw it, he would add a lot of things to it, as he did at Marvel. But he wasn't following Joe Simon's scripts religiously. But, you know, both of them were contributing. And when they were doing the work for Fawcett, they had all these sheets to follow, style guides, C.C. Beck did. And they were both complaining about the scripts were stupid, the characters were so boring, and they wouldn't let them veer from any, you know, it's basically it was micromanaged. They wanted the stories exactly the way they wanted them. They didn't want Jack Kirby to add any oomph to it.
Yeah.
And so they decided not to put their names on it. They were embarrassed by it. And then Captain Marvel came out, and they were both looking at it flabbergasted because it was the biggest comic ever, you know. And they didn't put their names on it.
Yep.
But they, you know, Captain Marvel was outselling Superman 4-1, I'm told. Well, then Superman, DC Comics sued him. And first they didn't win, but then they worked and worked, and finally another judge sided with DC. Fawcett was already doing well with their paperback publishing, so they just dropped comics altogether, and Captain Marvel disappeared, you know.
Yeah.
And then DC Comics bought Captain Marvel in 1973. And then there was a big lawsuit with Marvel Comics because they didn't want DC to have a character called Captain Marvel.
Right.
So what they did was they called it with one magic word, Shazam, the original Captain Marvel. And I guess since then, now DC's changed it to Shazam.
Yeah.
So Marvel Comics came out with Captain Marvel. Which ended up, first, I thought it was kind of stupid. It looked like Captain Spearmint to me. It was the green and white costume. But then Gil Kane designed the really awesome red and black costume.
Yep.
And then Jim Starlin started doing stories, and he got to be a really neat character.
Yeah. Marvel is absolutely one of the... And, of course, the death of Captain Marvel.
You know, yeah, it's strong.
Yeah, which is interesting to think about because they are making that movie.
Are they really?
With the female lead. With the female Captain Marvel.
Well,
so I'm wondering now. My understanding from what I've seen of the preview, the set photos and everything, it's going to be backstepped and done before the rest of the Marvel Universe back in the 90s. And like just for an example, Samuel L. Jackson is showing up as Nick Fury with two eyes.
Oh, okay.
So the set pictures look beautiful. The costume looks amazing. And it is the Spearmint costume, the green, you know. But my question I'm curious of is, are we going to get any kind of nod? Are we going to get an acknowledgement of Captain Marvel that died of, you know? I mean,
okay.
It seems disingenuous to the legacy of the character to not show that and mention it. So.
Well, see, that's the thing, you know, Captain Marvel was a really strong character. It's one I really liked a lot. And at one point, and this is something I hated, I don't like the character Rick Jones in Marvel Comics. He just irritated me to no end. He was a fly in the ointment. He was a monkey wrench. But in the Captain Marvel things, Captain Marvel was trapped in the negative zone. And he had the negabands. And I never read these stories. I just read about it later. I read some of the stories where he's trapped there. And the only way he could come back to Earth is he swapped places with Rick Jones. Rick Jones, I guess, had the negabands too.
Yeah.
So he would sit there and cross his arms and slam them. And then he would go to the negative zone, which I think it'd be hard enough to be in the negative zone with superpowers. But
never mind being just regular Joe Schmo.
Even if you're a flying ointment, irritating person.
Yeah.
That caused Bruce Banner to become a Hulk because you're stupid. Nevertheless, it still doesn't seem like a good trade. But nevertheless, it went. But that was the joke, was Rick Jones and Captain Marvel switching like Billy Batson and Captain Marvel switch. Well, here's one. Marvel has been putting out The True Believers, which is a great series. They're just a dollar. They were always, Jack Kirby comics.
Yep.
And Al and I have talked to him ad nauseum. These things are great. Well, I picked one up just because I didn't understand it. It's called Carol Danvers. And it's got the Spearmint Captain Marvel on it.
Okay.
It's a Gene Colan, Roy Thomas, Captain Marvel story. I have to say, reading this as a man in his 50s, Roy Thomas wasn't a very good writer in the beginning. Mm-hmm. He got better. I liked a lot of stories, but this is actually pretty dreadful. And I'm reading it, and
of all things to reprint.
Oh, it's just slogging. And Gene Colan drew it, and Gene Colan was good, and you got better as well. But anyway, I was wondering, why did they call it? I understand Carol Danvers was Ms. Marvel,
Right.
And which I guess now she is Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel, yes.
But anyway, when you're reading this, it's telling the story of how Captain Marvel came to Earth. And he ends up impersonating a military guy to get on this base. Again, the story's kind of awkward. But when he gets on the base, is this other scientist. They introduce a woman named Carol.
Okay.
And that's it. That's why they call it Carol Danvers.
That's it? That's all she appears?
Well, she's through it. She's basically the liaison for Captain Marvel. But that's Carol Danvers. But she was a scientist. She was in charge of this project, and it was super secret. Basically, they found the Sinister Sentry from Fantastic Four. They introduced the Kree. And they thought the Fantastic Four destroyed it when the King was drawing the stories way back. Well, in this one, Captain Marvel was sent to basically destroy Earth because they destroyed the robot. And they thought these Earthlings are going to be too much trouble. Well, they found out that this secret project had the Sentry, who's not working anymore.
Okay.
And they're trying to figure out where this is from. Anyway, but Carol is in charge of it. She's a scientist. Well, when Ms. Marvel came out, I read some of those stories. Even though I thought it was stupid they had She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, and Spider-Woman, I ended up loving Spider-Woman and Ms. Marvel. But the first story, that's neat. The movie?
Yeah, I'm showing him pictures of the costume on the movie set right now.
Okay, that is neat.
Yeah, it is a beautiful looking costume. So I think it really shows off the spearmint colors from the old costume.
Yeah.
But the design wise is the newer style.
Right,
costume.
Right.
So, it's really
it does look nice. That looks really neat.
Yeah, it looks I'm excited for this movie.
I
really truly am. And by the way, everybody, I know it's Free Comic Book Day, and I know it's been out for a week, but I still haven't seen Avengers: Infinity War. So that's the reason I'm not talking about it.
You're one of the few people on the planet, besides myself, that haven't seen it, because that's my...
It's a juggernaut. And, the thing is, I can't be on social media of any kind right now, because everybody's talking about it. And, there's little nods. I got a vague idea of who dies.
Oh, really?
Because of everybody talking. And posts, I'm like, whoop, got to scroll past that, So, but
I've seen people talk, but I guess I really didn't care. I haven't really seen what's happened in it, but it's extremely popular movie.
Yeah.
And anyway, with the Ms. Marvel comic that came out in 77, I think it was, she got a job working for the Daily Bugle for J. Jonah Jameson and was complaining about it, which again irritated me. Why does everybody have to work at the at the Bugle for J. Jonah Jameson?
It's the only one they've got. So that's the only newspaper in the entire Marvel Universe.
And then she was talking about how much, I guess, I don't remember what she was doing there. I think she had a magazine. And Jameson's on her case, and all through the book she kept saying she really likes her job except for you, Jonah. You make everything bad. I like my life except for you, Jonah. Well, the next thing you know, I didn't read any others. And then Dave Cockrum redesigned her and was drawing two issues where she had the swimsuit, and which was kind of neat, the black and it had this red swoosh on it.
Mm-hmm.
But she was in the Air Force.
Yep.
And so I don't know where she was working for the Daily Bugle at the beginning, but the Air Force part kind of made sense.
Yeah.
But her name was Linda Danvers.
Yeah.
Or Carol Danvers. I just blew it. Linda Danvers was Supergirl.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that Marvel was basically a backhanded slap. And those old Ms. Marvel stories they're doing in the 70s were drawn by Jim Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a Supergirl artist back in the old Silver Age.
So if you look at the black leotard costume standing next to the Power Girl costume, they're identical practically.
So, but the Power Girl came first.
Yeah.
Wally Wood designed that, but has a little boob window.
Yeah. That's the best way to put that, the boob window. But and this is a thing that happens a lot in the industry, is they kind of backhand each other back and forth. You know, and it's almost, in some ways, it's almost tiresome between DC and Marvel. But in another way, it's also really fun.
It is.
You know, just to see how they're going to put the digs to each other back and forth, you know. Like Marvel comic books calling the main universe 616.
And?
You didn't know
that? I never caught that.
We do thorough research on this show. I was told that Marvel called it the 616 universe because that was the numbers of the address to DC's office.
Oh, DC's office was 666.
Oh, was it 666?
Yeah, I remember that because this is in the 80s when you started getting some of the televangelists were starting to hold up copies of like Dark Knight and stuff.
Yeah.
And they were saying, you know, this is still got to stop. And everybody was afraid it was going to be another McCarthy hearings worth of
thing. Oh, brother. And, so ridiculous.
And then Jim Baker got busted for the prostitute, and they all went after each other's throats, and that was the end of it. But Dick Giordano was talking, because if you look at those old DC indicias in the comic books, it says, I think 616 Rockefeller Center. I think that's where they were at.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to go ahead and research it right now.
But DC, they're in California now. But Dick Giordano was talking about you can't really have a regular conversation with some people if your address is 666.
Yeah.
The second captain I had on the ship, the captain had they called the captain's launch, but it was like a little yacht. And so basically they could take it anywhere they wanted and the ship could still be out at sea. And it had three numbers on the back, they all did. But the second captain I had, which was a terrible captain, to the back of his launch, the number was 666.
Really?
And then everybody laughing about, well, I knew it, the captain's the Antichrist. And then people were saying, stop saying that, the captain doesn't like it. So if you were caught saying it, you get written up.
That's pretty funny, actually.
the 666 thing was huge in the 80s, and now it's just kind of just any other thing.
Well, I remember in 2006, June 6th, 2006.
Oh,
remember that was a huge thing. And one of the club that I was hanging out at, doing promotions and partying at all the time, had a 666 party, and I mean, It was this massive, insane thing that was supposed to happen, and it just kind of was like, you know, regular night at the bar.
I got so, you.
But what was funny is that day and I think it was California. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But the grandson of Anton LaVey got married that day. I don't think the wedding lasted very long. I'm pretty sure like there's some craziness that happened after that. But yeah, he got married on 666.
Okay. Well, the Earth 616, that came from the Captain Marvel work by Alan Moore and Alan Davis on the British Marvels. So, because that's where they started the whole multiverse thing. And then I guess when they were doing Excalibur, Marvel decided that was really neat. And so they started embracing the multiverse. But I never really knew anything about the 616.
Yeah.
I just, going back to all this, my thing is, I really enjoyed it in the 70s when DC had Captain Marvel, because they were, that's where they introduced me to the character, and all those reprints, they were reprinting things right and left besides the new comic, but I really enjoyed them, and I thought they did a good job. But then it seemed like before the 70s ended, they didn't know what to do anymore, and they stopped.
Yeah.
And they tried to bring you back at times. It's never really worked. Now, Evan Shaner drew some Captain Marvel stories, which are quite good recently.
Yeah. Now, by this Captain Marvel, you are referring to the Shazam.
Yeah, the DC,
Marvel,
the original.
Which should be interesting to see what happens with the Black Adam movie.
Oh, yeah.
Is we've got The Rock starring as Black Adam. I don't know when that starts production or anything like that. But, you know, personally, I think The Rock playing Black Adam should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, I could see that. That would be cool. Now, in the comics, Black Adam, even though I guess he was drawn kind of weaselly, he was still kind of heroic. He started out as the original Captain Marvel, and but he's called Adam.
Yeah.
But Shazam made him the first one, and then he turned evil, kind of like Sinestro, was the greatest Green Lantern, and then he turned bad.
Yep.
But whenever they drew Black Adam, he just seemed kind of, well, like Sinestro in the past, like this skinny, dorky, irritating thing. But, yeah, with The Rock, I could see him being it and being awesome.
Well, and see, if you look at current drawings of Black Adam, Black Adam is more of a large, muscular, you know, kind of character.
Yeah.
So, I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with it. Apparently, it should start filming sometime in 2019. So, that's going to be fun. I can't wait to see that. That's, you know, I'm really hoping. It wouldn't it be hilarious if DC screws all their movies up, but their two movies that everybody loves end up being Wonder Woman and Black Adam?
Well,
that'd be great.
Yeah, it would be great, because to me, Iron Man was always, even though he's a popular Marvel character, he was always one of their third-rate characters in some ways.
Yeah.
And when they did the movie, you know, I mean, most people didn't know it, but the movie turned out, I could see it with the CGI and everything, that it could be a cool movie. And
yeah,
it was. Yeah. And now Iron Man's huge. But
yep.
And I thought Green Lantern would have been just as good, which it was not. But
it was horrible.
Yeah, somebody lent it to me. Saying that, I watched it. I didn't really mind the movie. You know, if somebody lends it to you. The only thing I didn't like was at the end when he does the whole, the oath. He leads everybody in the oath, and that's fine, but then when he screams out, Green Lantern's blood, you don't do that?
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Well, you know, to me, the best part of that movie was Sinestro.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that's a fantastic actor as well.
Yeah.
I found Oa to be lacking. I mean, they're on this desolate planet. I mean,
that's how they always drew it. In the comics?
Oa? No.
Well, the ones I always read, it was just kind of sparse and
Oa was always, hold on, I'm going to pull up pictures now, because now Oa in all the comic books that I always read was like, you know, this beautiful green metropolis. I mean, it was not this wretched hell that they show on that movie, you know, and look, in the movie, it's like crap. It's like a destroyed land. The planet Oa in the Green Lantern comic books, I mean, this is what I remember. You know, a beautiful, almost Kryptonian-style city with a giant green battery in it. You know, that's it felt lackluster. I mean,
okay, well, see,
if
when
you've
I'm
got all these great, great warriors from all over the universe, you know, on one planet, and you're telling me the best that they can do for architecture is some... Well, hey, we're really fortunate that the rocks look exactly like chairs.
See, when I read these, I read a lot of reprints, the Gil Kane stories, which I love dearly, but I don't remember any backgrounds at all. I just remember the characters talking, you know, Tomar Ray and all these.
Guy Gardner opened a bar on Oa, you know.
See, I didn't read those comics. That was a later time.
Oa was this beautiful green metropolis. I mean, it was... It was a gorgeous city. But in the movie, it was just like, okay, you know, they kind of did like the city looking thing, but everywhere that they showed the Green Lanterns gathered, it looked like a bomb had gone off.
I do agree with that. I did like how they did the Green Lanterns themselves.
Yeah, the lanterns themselves were pretty good. The suit, you know.
If you want to watch a really good Green Lantern movie, they did an animated movie called First Flight.
Oh, yes.
And that one's good. I bought it, and my daughter was still in high school at the time. And she sat down and watched it with me. And at the very end, just like in the Green Lantern movie, they said, well, let's let our newest member lead us in the oath.
Yeah.
And they did that. And I sat on the couch, and when they did it, I said it too. Yeah. Brightest day and blackest night, no evil will escape my sight. And I just kept going. And my daughter just turns and looks at me. She has this dorky smile and disbelief. And when it finished, she goes, you're such a nerd! But she was delighted. And I said, Holly, if someone recites the Green Lantern Oath, you have to recite it too. I've known it since I was 8.
Yeah, I mean, you know... as soon as you hear those beginning words, you know what's coming. You know it.
And it's an awesome oath when you're a kid reading that.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, you know, the Ryan Reynolds movie. Well, I like Ryan Reynolds, but at the end, okay, this is fine. Until he screams out that Green Lantern, no.
Well, the CGI was not really well done. You know,
I agree.
The float-off head... the skin tight suit with the butt jokes. Ryan Reynolds is far better, far superior as Deadpool than any other role in comic books. He did make a pretty good character in the Blade movies. He played Hannibal King.
I never saw him.
he did do pretty good there. But of course, it was Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds, smart mouth, you know. Sarcastic. It was like he was born to put on that red suit. You know, he was born to be Deadpool.
Well, when they said he was going to be Green Lantern, he looked kind of like the Hal Jordan from the 60s. So I thought, okay, I could see that. But
you know, in all honesty, I think I'd rather see a Jon Stewart Green Lantern movie.
Yeah.
That would be far more interesting to me. And here I am, a huge Guy Gardner fan, cosplay as Guy Gardner. I know Guy Gardner could never be a Green Lantern movie character. It wouldn't work right. Jon Stewart, on the other hand, totally all about that. That would be awesome.
Now, one thing about Jon Stewart, I've always liked the character, but it was shocking. I bought the issue he first appeared in Green Lantern. And, the cover, he's standing there with the ring facing the reader. Hal Jordan's on the ground, and he's holding Hal Jordan's costume by the chest.
Yep.
And he goes, okay, they got Green Lantern. Now let's let them get a chance at me to see what they can do with me.
Yep.
But that was threatening.
Yeah.
And I remember I bought the comic thinking, what? And all through it, basically, Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams were always playing with this about at odds in society, you know, especially at the time. And not that it's changed drastically, but at the time, black people were not treated well here, you know. Yeah. And Jon Stewart had an attitude. And Hal Jordan is, you know, kind of military old school. And he's getting really upset at Jon Stewart. I remember at one point when he's trying to walk him through and, you know, he got the costumes. And then Jon Stewart took the mask off. And he goes, we blacks like to let it all hang out, you know. And Hal Jordan's getting really upset. That was interesting. But then, since then, they played around with Jon Stewart. It's like they didn't know what to do. One of my favorite series is Cosmic Odyssey, the Jim Starlin wrote. Marvel can't thank Jim Starlin enough, just like Jack Kirby, because all those movies are following everything Jim Starlin had put in.
Yeah.
But anyway, Cosmic Odyssey, you know, is written by Jim Starlin and drawn quite fantastic by Mike Mignola. And John Stewart was a prominent character in it, but he was different than the one I knew from the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up destroying a planet because he was too overconfident, and I felt really bad for him. But, you know, he moved on.
Yeah.
But then in the Justice League animated series, that John Stewart was a bit different. He was an ex-Marine, and that's, I liked them all, but that's my favorite one. And when you're talking about a John Stewart movie, if it was the one from the animated series, yeah that's a no-brainer right there.
Yeah. And the voice actor, I don't know who the voice actor is on
but
this
he
animated.
Was awesome.
His voice is fantastic.
And commanding.
Too. Yeah.
He was commanding.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and, you know, here's obviously some, and I always kill this guy's name, Idris Elba. He played the character in Dark Tower, Stephen King's Dark Tower. Brilliant actor, absolutely fantastic. Apparently, there's a whole lot of fan art about him being Jon Stewart, which would be awesome. But I kind of question because he is a little bit older, you know.
Mm.
So I would I'd like to see Jon Stewart more as like a mid-30s, maybe early to mid-30s.
Yeah, I guess
where, I want to say. Ibris is probably got to be, well, I mean, maybe he's about 10 years older than that. Maybe. You know, maybe I'm totally wrong. I don't know. But he is a hell of an actor. Absolutely would love to see that. That would be really cool to see him in the role of Jon Stewart. Totally would be awesome. You know, I don't think we're going to see another Green Lantern movie for quite a while.
Well, yeah, well, they kind of blew it on the first
one. Yeah, they really messed up.
I don't know. Yeah. That one, I don't know, because it could have been fantastic. And like I said, my daughter, her friends always come over, and all they talk about is Green Lantern. It seemed like Green Lantern was getting to be the next big thing, and then they saw, I don't know why.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, we're talking about this. I wish that DC hadn't ever bought Captain Marvel, even though I like some of the things they did with it. I wish somebody, a smaller company, might have bought him. Because they already had Superman, what are you going to do with Captain Marvel?
But we've had some amazing content because of that, like Superman versus Captain Marvel. You know, that battle was fantastic.
Or Kingdom Come. That was a great one.
There you go.
You know, here's one thing about that. There's a book called Men of Tomorrow. I think it's Men of Tomorrow. But they were talking about who was somebody I never heard of was basically the guy that owned National Periodicals. It was a guy named Donnelly. And he was basically a street thug. His family ended up taking over a printer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, basically the comic books are born from it. You know, you had National and American American Comics. Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, all that stuff came through there. But, that whole thing with Lex Luthor and Billy Batson in the tuxedo.
Yep.
Well, that was Donnelly. Donnelly was basically almost the crime boss who owned DC Comics.
Hmm.
And he'd go to parties and he'd have a guy in a Superman suit walk around shining his shoes, lighting his cigars, and always saying, "Yes, Mr. Donnelly." And he would always brag to his friends that, you know,
he owns
Superman, kowtows to him. And I thought, that's where they got it in Kingdom Come, which is strong.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that was actually Donnelly, who was a guy I never heard of until I heard Marty Pascal talk about him on Word Balloon, and then I've read about him since. But he was basically the guy that ran all the way up to him. I don't know what part it was where he basically disappeared. But I guess around the Comics Code or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's one thing. DC's done some good things with Captain Marvel, but I still wish somebody... You can't just own every character under the sun with one company.
Yeah.
So, well, it's about time, even though it's been flowing quite well. It's good to do it again, man.
I know. It's good. I mean, should we let everybody know about the new cast? Where it's pretty much... Guys, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, there's a lot going on with everybody's lives around here. Dallas is going to be on the show a lot less. Al has moved away as well. So pretty much this is it. It's the two of us. We're going to try and, you know, bring in guests and stuff and, you know, other people to talk to. Maybe try some different ideas here and there. But, you know, we're coming into a new time for the show. But we're still here. We're still doing shows. You know, let us know if you guys got any ideas, something that you might want us to talk about. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes.
Get those conversations going on the message boards, on Facebook and everything. You know, thank you guys for all your support, and we look forward to making more shows together.
Well said. Now, one thing, Al, I asked him if he could do a show out there. He lives, you know, close to some other people who have been on the show. He's supposed to do an episode, but then things happen and he hasn't. So you may be hearing from Al again, just probably not with us.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all we got right now. Thanks for listening. And in the meantime,
read more comics.